This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Last year, local environmental journalism portal makaranga.org published 4 in-depth articles based on their investigation into forest use changes here in Peninsular Malaysia. So titled The Forest Files, the series explored issues such as forest use policies and also key drivers of forest loss, among many, many other issues. So last week, we discussed who calls the shots on forest use in Peninsular Malaysia and explored the policies that govern forestry issues and what motivates decision makers. But today, in what is our second of 3 interviews covering Makaranga's findings, I speak once again to Lau Yau Hua, the co-founder, co-editor and writer at makaranga.org, and also Siti Shaliza Mustafa, who is the senior manager of forest management at the Malaysian Timber Certification Council, or the MTCC, about the role of the MTCC, which promotes the certification of forestry and timber products in Malaysia that meet international standards of practice, and also, you know, to discuss whether this can actually promote sustainable logging and sustainable forestry. So welcome, both of you. How are you today?
Good, good.
I'm fine, thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. So this, of course, is part of a series that we're doing in collaboration with makaranga.org. And Yau Hua, I guess, you know, if you could just give us a quick reminder on the series Forest Files that Makaranga did, you know, what is it all about?
Right, so Forest Files, we published in November 2020, and it's made up of like 4 parts. And basically, it's an in-depth analytical look into what drives forest use decisions in Peninsular Malaysia, right? Mm-hmm. And the whole project, I have to thank the Pulitzer Southeast Asia Rainforest Journalism Fund because they sponsored Makaranga to do this project. Yeah, as I said, so it's a dive into the policies, the legislation, the, I guess, the finances and the environmental aspects of forest use in Peninsular Malaysia. And it's 4 parts, so there's a lot to learn from it. Yeah.
There was so much to take away from it. And we're trying our best to kind of digest it a little bit, get everybody to go and read all 4 of those articles in the series. But just looking at it, right, you started that series, right, of 4 articles. You started off by describing what had happened in the town of Jamaluang, which is a small town in Johor. Can you share a little bit about what's happening there?
Well, yeah, so Jamaluang is about 20 minutes drive south of Mersing. It is indeed a small town. I mean, you can just zip through the whole town in like 2 minutes or less, actually. And I went there because I received news that there was a huge, about 2 huge patches of forest that were recently excised, you know, degazetted out of permanent reserve forest, and that they were being clear logged. And that there is also a problem of elephants, like wild elephants roaming around and, you know, sort of like damaging property, you know, apparently because of this deforestation that happened there or around the whole area. I mean, there's plenty of deforestation sort of like around the whole area between Mersing and Kota Tinggi. And there are also like special dynamics going on there between federal and state and I guess other concerns when it comes to the forest use there. So I went there, I wanted to speak to. So this was at a time when they, I guess, the prohibition on cross-state travel was lifted. So immediately I went last year. And I went there to really to like speak to the people on the ground to know like how were their lives affected. So I went there for 2 days and the people, the residents there, I mean, Jamaluang used to be a mining town and then a logging town, like a timber, you know, town in the 60s to the 70s. And the residents there, you know, I met all these uncles who were just chit-chatting by the road, you know, under this huge tree at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And then they were telling me like, yeah, how life used to be, you know. And now they're complaining about that their environment, the rivers were a lot more murky than before, or the rivers were just becoming more and more shallow, you know, from rivers into streams and then to creeks. And elephants, you know, sort of like damaging their fields, their farms, even entering into towns. And many of them, actually, in fact, like the 10 or 12 of them that I've met, they all point to the deforestation that happened just east of their town. I mean, there's no hard evidence, I guess. You know, we need to do research on that, but that's what all the residents there think. Yep. So that's what that's the whole experience there from Jamalong.
Mm-hmm. And you wanted to highlight this area in particular, right? And why did you want to do that?
Yeah, as I said, because there are like all the dynamics there, right? Ah. Because the whole, when I did this forest fire investigation, it was to look at the real drivers of like who makes the decision when it comes to forest use in Peninsular Malaysia. Because we always see the federal government making announcements or making plans in the newspaper, and we might think that, oh, okay, so it's actually the prime minister that decides, you know, but how should this land be used and not. But then when I dig more, when I realize it's actually the state governments who actually, you know, as we spoke up the previous episode with Adrian, it's the state governments that actually hold authority, right, on land use.
Yeah.
But then we also know that the federal government has this central forest spying, like national plan, right, national physical plan. Then, like, how do these, are there tension between the federal government and the state government when it comes to forest use or land use? And so in Jamalong itself, there's actually part of the central forest spine there. It's not the key part of the central forest spine. It's one of the secondary linkages. I can't remember. It's either SL4 or SL5 of the CFS2. But now with the forest there gone, so what's the fate of this secondary linkage? What's the fate of it in, you know, the federal government's plan? Actually, nobody could answer me this.
Okay.
No, I asked KATSA, they were silent on this. I asked the forestry department, nobody lied on me this question, among many of the other questions that nobody lied on me. So I thought Jamalong is a good case to look at all these dynamics that's happening.
Okay, yep. All right. And we're going to discuss it a little bit more of later on, but I do know that the federal government, they came up with the National Forestry Policy 1978 and the National Forestry Act 1984 to promote sustainable forestry in the country, right? I mean, and it doesn't sound like that's what happened in Jamalong, but what are some of the methods that they came up with to promote sustainable forestry through these two acts?
Well, at the time, in the 70s and the 80s, they did not have forest certification yet. So what they did then was just to implement sustainable forestry.
Mm-hmm.
And to classify most of the forests as permanent reserve forests. And that's a big deal because the law, the National Forestry Act says that within this permanent reserve forest, you know, it's not so easy to excise it or to change it. And within the permanent reserve forest, the National Forestry Policy says that you have to do sustainable forestry. So then there's no clear logging.
Mm.
There are strict rules that set the limit on how much road you can build. And the size of the trees that you can log, and then you have to mark every tree. So it's not clear logging. So so I think Malaysians really need to know this, that when we say logging, like most of the logging that happens in Malaysia is legal and adhere to sustainable practices.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can only say on paper, because I haven't really checked on the ground, right? I don't know, but
yeah.
At least what the foresters tell me is that. And that's the law,
mm-hmm.
right? So that was a big deal, I think, that the federal government did, you know, to put it all into permanent reserve forests and then to enforce sustainable forestry logging and mm-hmm. management in all these permanent reserve forests.
Yeah, and you spoke to many forestry stakeholders, right? Conservationists, researchers, foresters, loggers, even residents who live near those forests. And what were their thoughts on this whole concept of sustainable logging and forestry?
Well, I think, of course, there are always exceptions, but I think overall, across the board, everyone is really happy that we are doing sustainable forestry. Well, of course, right? Because the alternative is to do unsustainable forestry.
It's better
clear
than
logging.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there are two caveats here. I should say that even the loggers I've spoken to in Johor and in Terengganu and also in Kedah, they are actually supportive of this kind of sustainable forestry, although they acknowledge that it has made life harder for them.
Mm.
In fact, one of them from Johor told me that this kind of forestry, this kind of logging is really difficult to do. Not anyone can do it. If you let me go in and just clear cut the forest, any cat and dog can do that.
Yeah.
So they say it's really difficult for them to do, and they have to do it well. Of course, the caveat here is that is our sustainable forestry practices as it is now really sustainable for the long run? So I think we have only done maybe at most two cycles of this sustainable forestry, because every cycle is about 25 to 30 years. So we have only done maybe at most two. So can it really be sustainable in the long run to give us the timber supply that we expect to get out of the forest? I think even the foresters, like the forestry officials themselves, told me that that remains to be seen. Yeah.
Okay. All right. And as part of your research, you mentioned that you spoke to loggers and you actually followed them to see evidence of sustainable logging practices. What were some of your findings from following them?
Yeah. Well, to clarify, I didn't actually see them log, okay. But I saw the forest after it was sustainably logged. I saw the forest after it was, I think it was 3 decades after it was sustainably logged. And it looked really good to me.
Okay.
Like, it was what I would expect a forest to be. I mean, it's not Taman Negara type of forest, of course. Mm. But it looked good to me. And so at least to me, that was evidence that it could be sustainable. That sustainable forestry practices can give us a forest that after it has rested for 25 years or 30 years, it looks like a forest, healthy forest to me.
Okay, all right. I'm speaking today to Lau Yao Hua, the co-founder, co-editor and writer at makaranga.org, and also Siti Shaliza Mustafa, the senior manager of forest management at the Malaysian Timber Certification Council. And my apologies to Shaliza, we haven't heard much from you in this first part, but don't worry, coming up after this break, Shaliza will explain the role of the MTCC in promoting sustainable forestry. So keep here on Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture and I'm Juliet Jacobs. We are in our second part of our coverage of makaranga.org's in-depth investigation into forest use changes in Peninsular Malaysia. So with me today are Lau Yao Hua, the co-founder, co-editor and writer at makaranga.org, and also Siti Shaliza Mustafa, the senior manager of forest management at the Malaysian Timber Certification Council. And we're going to find out more now in the second part about the role the MTCC plays in promoting sustainable forestry. So, Shaliza, you, of course, are part of the MTCC, or the Malaysian Timber Certification Council, which oversees the Malaysian Timber Certification Scheme. So for those of us who are unfamiliar with all of this, can you tell me what exactly the MTCC does?
Well, MTCC, we were formed in the 1998, basically, and it was an initiative, you know, stemmed from discussions with the industry and the government, and it stemmed from the discussions that the government had in Rio, in 1992. So it's just one thing led to another, and MTCC was formed basically because it was seen like globally, you know, all the stakeholders understand that sustainable forest management is the way to go. Mm. And in terms of, you know, conserving whatever remaining forest that we have, And certification is one of the ways that can be done to merge, you know, the demand from the market as well as the demand to make sure that conservation, sustainable use of forest resources are practiced. So that's why we were formed, basically to operate this national timber certification scheme. It used to be called the National Timber Certification Scheme, but we changed it to MTCS. And what we do, basically, we facilitate the development of the Sustainable Forest Management Standard for certification. So the standard that was developed for certification is basically, the outcome from, a very lengthy process of stakeholder consultation. So it involves interests from all different stakeholders, the environment, the social workers and indigenous people, the industry, even the government, who are basically, they are the owners of the forest. The states are all the owners of the forest. So they are also involved in the development of the certification standard. So one of the key role of MTCC then now is to run this program and to ensure that the third-party certification scheme could be implemented in the country, mm-hmm. based on the standard developed locally by the local stakeholders.
Yeah, and that must be something, right? I'm assuming it's not an easy task, working with all those different stakeholders involved in this issue. There's so many, as you just mentioned, especially government agencies like, the Forestry Department or the and Forest Plantation Development Berhad. I mean, what is the synergy there? What is it like there?
Forest Plantation Development Berhad came a bit later. It's something else. That's an initiative by the government, basically, as a way to find an alternative sources for the industry, basically as an alternative wood source for the industry. So that was developed. And it's in parallel, but we don't really work together in that sense. Because in our standard, we do have this cut-off date requirement. Basically, we want to maintain, we also abide by this commitment for zero deforestation, basically. And it's this basically a global commitment to avoid deforestation. And we have this cutoff limit, cutoff date of 31st December 2010 for the establishment of forest plantation. So anything that is developed after this date is not eligible for certification. Mm-hmm. So it's a conundrum basically for us as well, because we want to support the government initiative, but at the same time we also need to ensure that the commitment for zero deforestation is respected. So there is this line that was drawn to enable certification being conducted for forest plantation. So anything that is developed after this cutoff date is unfortunately not able to be certified.
Just to clarify, in case our listeners are wondering why deforestation pop up here, it's because the forest plantation, to develop a forest plantation, you have to clear
the whole,
whatever was there, and then you plant, like, say, a single variety of acacia tree or rubberwood tree, right? So if that land was previously natural forest, then you would have to clear that natural forest first. So that's what that was what Shaliza meant by where that deforestation actually comes in.
Mm-hmm,
But of course, in our national forest policy, forest plantation is still considered a forest. So there is this debate about what is forest and what is not, and whether it's single species or natural forest. But when we talk about certification of sustainable forest management, then we need to draw some line somewhere. So this is where the line is drawn. And also because we are internationally endorsed by PFC, we also have to ensure that the expectations of the global stakeholders are also met in this sense.
I guess, for those unfamiliar with the whole process, right? I mean, how are these certificates actually awarded and who actually receives them? I mean, how does it all work?
We only operate the scheme, but the audit is conducted by a third-party auditor. Basically, there are certification bodies such as we have Sirim QAS is very popular, and at the moment, only Sirim QAS is accredited to undertake auditing under the Sustainable Forest Management Standard, basically to undertake this audit. So basically, the audit will be conducted by the certification body. So it depends. It's the forest managers that need to apply for certification. So it's independent, it's voluntary. Mm-hmm. It is not a mandatory. But of course, in Sabah and Sarawak, they have their own state policy and making certain areas mandatory to be certified. Even in Peninsular Malaysia, the National Land Council, it used to be the National Forest Council, has also agreed, decided that all states in Peninsular Malaysia should be certified. So this is actually coming back to your earlier question about the promotion of the National Forestry Act and the National Forestry Policy. Yeah. It was actually promoted through this National Forestry Council, which is, the membership is amongst all the Menteri Besars of the states. Mm-hmm. So anyhow, coming back to how certification is implemented, the forest managers, for Peninsular Malaysia, they are the state forest departments. Whereas for Sabah and Sarawak, they would be mostly the concessionaires who obtain a long-term forest management license or concessions from the state governments. So these are the parties who would apply for certification from the certification body. So they would submit the application, and the certification body will then conduct this audit. There's stage one audit, stage two audit, so they have to fulfill all the requirements of the standard. So there's like 9 principles of sustainable forest management that they have to fulfill. 49 criteria. So we have 99 indicators, 105 indicators for forest plantation. So there's a lot of requirements that these forest managers need to fulfill in the audit process. So the audit, the decision to award a certificate is made by the certification body, basically. So it's independently made. MTCC has no role in terms of how the decision is made or whether or not to grant a certification, because it's based on the professionalism and based on the audit conducted by the certification body.
Okay.
But of course, these are all, we have like, you know, tons and tons of paperwork basically that you need to look into and fulfill before you can actually, you know, get any certificate under this scheme. So it's quite a lengthy and laborious process basically for a forest manager to obtain certification. And maintaining it is another matter as well. You know, every year there'll be audit. It's just not one-time audit and that's it. You know, every year there'll be surveillance audit. And then every 5 years, then they will have to undergo recertification audit, another comprehensive audit. So it's an ongoing process every year, basically.
Can you tell us, like, in Peninsula itself, I mean, Sabah, Sarawak, so they're, those are not statewide certification, right? Those are by mm-hmm. the each concessionaires itself.
Yeah.
So in Peninsula Malaysia, so you say it's a state forestry department that, that actually applies for this certification, this forest management certification. So in Peninsula Malaysia itself, like which states are certified, which states are not?
Well, at the moment, it's easier to say that all the timber producing states are certified. Perak, right. Terengganu, Pahang, Johor just recently obtained back their certification.
Johor was last year, right?
Yeah, okay. Last year. So unfortunately, Kelantan and Kedah has not yet, they lost their certificate and they have not been able to re-obtain their certificate at the moment. So I think Kedah is on the way. They have undergone their recertification audit, but Kelantan not yet. But other states like small states like Penang, Malacca, who does not have a big production of timber from the forest, they're not applying for certification.
Okay. And it sounds like a very laborious process, right? As you mentioned, and mm-hmm. you know, it sounds like a very robust process as well. And as you said earlier, it's not, it's something that you do voluntarily, right? So, yeah. You know, why would, how would you describe the importance of this sort of logging certification, right? I mean, what is it, what do states usually use it for in the context of logging?
Well, it's a commitment of the country, basically. It's you know, about our commitment to maintain at least 50% of our forests, yes. Our land to be covered in forests. So the government has set this tone, basically, that we value our forest. And the decision to get all this timber-producing states to be certified was, as I told you, was made at the highest level at the National Forestry Council. So that's the commitment of the state, of the government, to implement sustainable forest management. So Yauha mentioned earlier about the implementation of sustainable forest management has been done even before MPCC, yeah. You know, was formed. But at the time, it was more focused on sustainable production of timber from the forest. You know, so of course, when you want to have sustainable timber, you have to make sure that the forest is, you know, harvested in a way that will not damage the forest. So safeguards were in place to make sure that the forest is managed in an ecological way as possible. So you said it's a certification of logging. It's not certification of logging. It's certification for forest management.
Forest management,
so
okay.
Because it's not just logging. Of course, logging is just one part of sustainable of forest management. Mm. With certification, we bring in all these other elements and aspects into forest management rather than just managing it for sustainable production. We bring in all these elements of environmental protection, of respect of other stakeholders, depending on the forest, like indigenous people, local communities living nearby who also rely on some of the ecosystem services, certain areas where there are high conservation value areas that need to be protected, biodiversity. So all these elements are also, are included in the requirements for certification. So these are things that were not, resources that needed basically to monitor all these different aspects. So when certification was starting to be implemented, then it was a really steep learning curve even for the forest managers, because suddenly they have to know everything. They have to learn about biodiversity. They have to learn about how to, talk to the kampung people, to talk to the indigenous people. So these are some of the new elements that they have then take on board in terms of how they manage the forest resources. So that's where certification, I would say that that's the improvement that certification brings into forest management process. It enrich the process with all the other elements that, that were not in previously.
Okay, yeah. I mean, that sounds, it sounds like a really wonderful initiative. And I just want to go back to Jemaluang, which we were talking about earlier, right? Mm. So I know that in 2016, Johor's forest management certification was actually suspended. And you guys kind of alluded to it earlier as well. And this was following an audit, right? By yeah. MTCC, if I'm correct. So what actually happened there? You know, what caused them to lose their certification?
The audit was conducted by the certification body. At the okay. time, it was SGS. At the time, SGS was still accredited to conduct certification under our scheme. And, well, basically, under our standard, as I told you, the commitment for avoiding deforestation, we have a limit of 5% of the total forest areas that can be converted into other uses, mm. You know, for forest plantation or for development, for, you know, establishing roads or whatever. So 5% of the total forest areas is the maximum allowable area that can be converted.
That's 5% of the total forest area under the State Forestry Department, right? So yes. there are some forests yes. that's not under, not managed
it's
by
the
State
PRF,
Forestry.
Yeah.
yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's
all right.
the permanent reserve forest gazetted to be managed sustainably.
Yeah.
So this is the scope of certification that's used under the scheme. So what happens is that for Johor, they have basically exceeded this 5% limit.
Okay.
So even though, I mean, it's of course it's the prerogative of the state government. It's to decide what they want to do with their land, and if they want to degazette their forest areas, that's up to the state to decide, of mm. course. But we have our scheme with this very strict requirement where you can't convert anything more than 5% of the forest areas, and the conversion was actually more than that because a huge. Some chunks of the forest areas were degazetted, such as the case in Jemaluang. So it was degazetted and it exceeded the 5% limit. So the certificate had to be suspended and finally it just expired because they can't fix the problem. they yeah. can't solve the issue anymore because you know that's just it. So, of course, they are now recertified with a new scope. So we hope that the issue when the certificate was suspended early on, we hope that they are now fully aware of the, you know, the effect that, you know, degazettement or conversion of forest reserves have on their and it affects their reputation basically as well,
right.
And their commitment to maintain their forest areas.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they come back and reapply for certification.
Yeah, so the two PRFs that were excised at the time were the Tenggaro PRF and then the Jemaluang PRF, and they add up to a total of around 17,000 hectares,
mm.
right? So yeah, so those were excised, and then as Shaliza said, so it was more than the 5% of PRFs at the time. And Shaliza was saying that they would have, I guess, now realized the consequence of excision. I would be surprised if at the time, the State Forestry Department of Johor did not already know that excising that two parcels of PRF would then exceed the criteria.
Mm.
But still, they went ahead. And of course, you know, as Shaliza also said, it's a state government's right to do, declare whichever land they want to be as the permanent reserve forest or not. But, you know, Shaliza, I must say, I'm quite, I guess, disappointed in a way that you know, after a few years, you know, they can come back and then get recertified, but the forest there is already gone. And you know, what is there to stop them from, or any other state, to say that, hey, you know what, we need to excise again. Too bad it's more than 5%. We just wait. We just, you know, get suspended this time. Then we wait another 5 years, and then we come back and reapply for it. Wouldn't that like kind of like discredit or devalues the whole purpose of the certification in the first place?
Well, we won't see it that way because the objective of certification is basically to make sure that continuous improvements are made. Knowing that the de-gazettement was done by the state government, and certification is actually granted to the state forestry department. You know, it's basically a certificate to give a recognition on the practices of sustainable forest management being practiced by the state forestry department. So we can't be penalizing the state forestry department for not being able to protect this land from the state, exemption by the state government. And to be fair to the state forestry department, they have actually written protest, whenever an area is proposed to be de-gazetted, the state forestry department will usually send protest and try to protect this forest areas. But of course, they are just another, a government agency. We see it is, if we don't certify the area, if we continue to penalize the state, or basically penalizing the state forestry department for not protecting, this forest areas, knowing that they don't really have that much power to protect the forest areas from being de-gazetted, it won't really help in terms of promoting sustainable forest management in the state. We want to make sure that whatever remaining forest that there is continues to be managed sustainably, and then we would also know how its improvements are being made on these areas. Of course, no state would want to for fun and then just to lose, certificate and come back. It's not easy to come back either. It takes many years from 2016 until 2020. Then, it took them 4 years to come back in to be certified. The same with Kelantan, they're still not able to come back in. So there's a lot of, meanwhile, they are, pressured by the industry. Then the industry is losing out on the timber, on the resource from the states, where they needed the certified timber basically from the states so that they can process certified timber to be exported to a higher value market. So when they obtain uncertified logs from the states, then it lowers the value of the logs that they receive, even though the quality might be the same, but because they can't say that it was obtained from sustainably managed forests, then we lose out basically in the market. So there's a lot of factors that we need to consider as well. We're talking about sustainability. There are three pillars of sustainability. We talk about environment, social, as well as economy. Mm. So this is where the economy part has to come in as well. Otherwise, then if the forest loses its economic value, then it gets harder to protect the forest as forest.
Shaliza, just now you mentioned that certified timber would allow local, say, timber mills, right, who process the timber, to then sell their products to high value markets like EU. Right. And so then we expect that there is a premium that this high paying, EU countries would pay a premium for this certified timber, correct? So that would be the financial incentive for, I guess, the state forestry department to get certified, part of the incentives. But what I've heard from loggers, and also what Adrian Yeo was saying in the last episode, was that actually, these countries who are demanding for certified timber are not paying the premium for the timber itself, for the certified timber. So is it true? I mean, what's your take on this?
Yeah, this issue about premium has been talked about for 20 years. Now it has been, things move very fast nowadays, and we don't talk about premium anymore. Basically, we're talking about market access. We're talking about having access to this premium markets. Because you basically now you are able to sell to certain markets that require certified timber. And usually these markets are willing to pay extra. And it's not, we can't call it a premium that, okay, you give us certified timber, we pay you this much extra. They don't usually do that, but they are usually willing to pay higher prices 4 certified logs. And this could actually, we don't really, we're still looking into the figures basically, but from the figures, we can basically be quite certain that certified logs or certified products were sold at a higher value compared to the non-certified ones. So we can't put a percentage of a premium per se, but it's just that it can be sold at a higher price.
Well, for sure, if we look at the data coming out from the Malaysia, I think MTIB. It's the MTIB, I think it's the Malaysia Timber Industry Board. If we just compare the amount of ringgit exported to EU, for example, compared to the amount, the volume of timber sold, then that ratio is definitely higher for EU export markets compared to, say, Southeast Asia or China or other markets. Of course, I've heard that there's no premium, right? But then the data shows that they seem to be paying a higher price per meter cube of timber that they buy. So I'm not sure what's the difference there, the discrepancy there.
It's about maintaining the premium market. Whether you want to continue selling to this market or not, then if you're not certified, then you will not be able to sell this, and you would have to find a lower value market to sell to.
Yeah. And what you said there, you know, about sustainability, that's something that you, I think, spoke to Yahua about in the Forest Files series, right? You said that certification isn't only about legalities, it's about sustainability. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe you can just help elaborate on that point a bit further for us.
Yeah, as mentioned earlier, previously, sustainable forest management was about sustainable production. And then now we're talking about a more wholesome, you know, sustainability, you know, elements in the management. So that's what I mean about certification. We're not talking just about legality. Whatever that's coming out from the permanent forest reserves are all legal. Basically, when they're locked legally, of course, they would be issued all this removal passes. So this timber that's coming out from all this permanent forest reserves or even from state land, they are all legal. And then especially when you talk about state land, it's not certified because, you know, most of the logs coming out from state land are for development purposes and we don't certify these areas. Mm. So basically, we certify areas where the forest is going to be managed as forest in perpetuity. So this is the difference between legality and sustainability. Basically, because we want to make sure that not only the production is sustainable, but the entire forest ecosystem is also taken care of.
Okay.
And of course, the people that works in it, you know, the people who works in it, the workers, you know, the rights of the workers are protected. The rights of the indigenous people surrounding the areas, the rights of the village, local communities living around the areas are also being considered. So we have heard a lot of complaints from the forest managers. They say, you know, we have to do, you know, all this work of other people. You know, we have to now, you know, look after the rights of the workers. They did not have to do that previously, but now they have to make sure that whenever contractors come in, they are not employing illegal workers. They are not employing, you know, so they have to make sure that the workers that they employ are protected in terms of their, you know, EPF, yeah, their health and safety. So all these matters are also considered. That's where the difference is. Legality is legal, but sustainability, you're talking about all stakeholders' interests are taken care of.
At the same time, right, we often see in the news, you know, reported indigenous communities or villagers who voicing out, they say, like, all this logging happening and it's like, you know, damaging our environment, damaging our rivers, and we were never consulted. So this consultation, you know, of indigenous people, the communities living in and around the forest that are supposed to, that were going to be logged, is part of the certification, I guess, criteria. But then why do we still see this news of, you know, this locals, you know, complaining that they were, I guess, you know, either suppressed or just ignored out of the whole equation?
They're not ignored, per se. I mean, whenever there are complaints that are submitted by these communities, it will be then submitted as well to the certification bodies, to the auditors. So the auditors will then, whenever they conduct their audit, surveillance, be it surveillance audit or recertification audit, they will take into consideration all these complaints that had been submitted. And then they will verify it in the field, you know, at the ground, and see whether the complaints are founded or not. And of course, sometimes in a village, there are fractions as well. Like, you know, there are sometimes certain fractions in the village. Whenever the auditors go to the village, they hear different stories. You know, so what we have to rely on now is whatever information that the auditors could obtain during the audit, as well, and from the information that they receive from all these different stakeholders, and they have to then, you know, make their own judgment whether or not sufficient consultation has been conducted. In certain cases, the complaints are valid, and the forestry department or the companies has to undertake remedial actions or measures. There were some instances where, when there were complaints submitted, the forestry department actually cancelled the license in that area and changed it to a different area. You know, so there has been instances where whenever such issues cropped up, or there has been probably some consultation may not have been conducted thoroughly, so then the forest managers will then have to make you know, corrective actions, and this will then be verified by the certification body. But it has to look at the management of the FMU as a whole, the forest management unit as a whole, because it's the state forest management unit. It's a huge area. So if the entire, they would go and visit a lot of areas within the state. Mm. So some complaints may be only occurring in one village, but they have visited 10 villages, you know, so would this one village, you know, would cost the certificate for the entire FMU. So then they would have to balance this non-conformities and the non-conformities, and also the actions taken by the forestry department to improve on the system. So as long as improvements are being made and actions have been taken to ensure that such things don't repeat itself, then they are able to maintain their certificate. So we hope that stakeholder consultations can be conducted in the best ways possible. But of course, it's easier to manage the trees and the forest than managing people. So you understand the complexities. And a lot of these issues are not only about forestry. You know, it's about land use, it's about land rights. And this goes beyond what forest departments can do. In most of the cases. So we have to be fair as well in terms of, you know, putting the onus or putting on the responsibility in certain matters where the forestry department are not able to solve. You know, we can't expect the forestry department to grant land rights, but what they're doing is basically they respect the rights of the indigenous community to still use the resources from the forest. So we want to see that the rights of the communities in having access, you know, to the forest resources are maintained and are respected. So it's one of the requirements in the standard, basically.
Yeah, we're running out of time, I'm afraid. But I guess, you know, if you had to give a message about the role that certification plays to you know, to manage and to kind of solve all these different issues, you know, what would your final message be?
We have to realize that certification is not the panacea that can solve every problem. Yep. You know, we have to understand the limitations that certification has. We can't solve land issues. We can't solve, you know, climate change, you know, but what certification can do, basically, we can put in all the necessary structures, and when we have certification, it provides the structure of sustainability of sustainable forest management, and it is being monitored. Yeah. You know, so this third party monitoring element in certification is very important to make sure that those people who are supposed to be implementing it are always on their toes, basically, because they are always being audited, they are always being you know, monitored, and so basically, that's the most important part of certification, is that it increases transparency I think that's where we need to ensure sustainable forest management is implemented on the ground. Basically, I just want to highlight that we are all in this together. We want to make sure that our resources are sustainably managed and are protected for all our, you know, for our future generations. So we need to work together. You know, all the stakeholders, we need to understand that in certain matters, sometimes we need to compromise a little bit here and there so that we all can get a win-win situation. We have limited room to work in. So mm-hmm. we have to basically work together and make sure that we can get the best out of the every initiative that there is to ensure conservation and sustainability of our resources. So I would like to call on all the different stakeholders and then to work together and support the protection of the forest and the implementation of sustainable forest management.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, both of you, for joining me today. I've been speaking to Lau Yau Hua, the co-founder, co-editor and writer at makaranga.org, and also Siti Shaliza Mustafa, the senior manager of forest management at the Malaysian Timber Certification Council, about the whole concept of sustainable forestry and what that means and how certification plays a role in promoting this. So to read Makaranga's coverage in full, just head to makaranga.org and search for Forest Files. And if you miss any part of today's interview or our first interview in this series with Adrian Yeo that aired last week, you can download the podcast at bfm.my/earth or find it on the BFM app. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.